Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hi, my name is Seth Rogen. And I feel fantastic about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. We have a wonderful show planned today. In fact, very much looking forward to talking to our guest. And I have a feeling that this gentleman and I have so much to talk about that we will go on for quite a while. So I think, you know, can do our normal babble up front, but I don't think we should get crazy because I want to leave plenty of room for Mr. Rogen. Sona, how are you?
I'm doing well.
What's wrong?
That was weird.
Yeah, that was really weird. You spoke like a hostage who had just been handed the phone.
I know. Don't know why I did
tell him.
That.
Tell him you're alive. Tell him.
Honestly,
I'm fine.
Blink if you're okay.
When you ask me a simple question like that, I freeze. But I'm okay. I'm good. I'm doing fine. I'm fine. It's cool. Everything's good.
I'm calm.
And I don't know why I get so
Matt. Matt Gorley, how are you?
I'm good. I'm keeping it tight. I'm good.
Well, no, you don't.
Keep it tight. Don't talk to me. Keep going. Okay. Keep going.
No. We're not in that big a rush. I mean, I want to make sure we leave room.
Oh,
because I read his book and there's a lot to say and he has so many funny anecdotes. But I really cherish the time I have with you guys up front. You know, it doesn't. What? Who says that talking to an incredibly funny writer, comedian, actor, producer is going to be better than a chat with you guys? Listen, there's no rule that says his will be superior to what you guys come up with right now. What you got?
Well, we've already heard the interview and it is superior. So.
I know. We just recorded it. You're making it sound very mysterious, but we already did it.
And
so the jig is up.
Yeah. You denied my reality. Yes, we have. Well, that's terrible. That's bad show business and it's bad improv. It is. You can't just deny someone's reality. I set up. Yes, we did the interview first. With Seth Rogen, and it's really fun. I just had a joy doing it, and it was wonderful. And you can't say I had a joy doing it. That doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was joyous talking to you, but you can't say I had a joy. unless I had an almond joy. Yes, I ate an almond joy as I spoke to Seth Rogen, and it was wonderful. So I had a joy doing it. But it went long, and I was just going to try and act like Seth's standing by, ready to talk and build up the momentum. But the fact that you guys just blew it and said, I've already talked to Seth, it takes away all the excitement of, yes, that Seth is waiting in the wings and I'm going to bring him out. What if
I think the listeners know.
Yeah. I don't think they do. I think the listener, our job is to, almost like magicians, create a different reality. And we suspend their disbelief. And I think they believe that Seth is standing by and right now he's going to step in and talk to me. And there's like an electricity in the air that I've felt for years before people would come out pre-COVID, you know? And now you guys you've taken that suspense away.
You want people to think that we make the guests wait while we talk complete nonsense in the beginning of these podcasts. And some of which goes on for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, even longer possibly.
Yeah, and you want people to think we kept like Michelle Obama or Hillary Clinton.
Of course, you know why?
Listening to
because the implication is that that's how big a star I am.
Oh,
that
God,
I can just babble nonsense about whatever comes to mind and we can have these purely ridiculous conversations. And while that's happening, of former First Lady is waiting patiently to come and speak to me, because that's the weight that I carry in this business. Yeah. That's the illusion I want to create. But you just said, no, the rabbit came out through a trap door in the bottom of the hat.
We can recreate this. We can say Laura Bush is waiting right now, and she's not even scheduled to be on the episode. She's just hoping to get on.
We want people to believe that Laura Bush can't get on the podcast and is desperately trying.
Yeah, come on, go with this.
Yeah, she has a Netflix special that she wants to promote, a stand-up special, where she just kills it and she can't wait to get on and promote it.
Yeah.
On Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
All people have nothing better to do except just listen to the three of us babble.
But I think we should start saying things like, look, I know Seth Rogen's a big deal. He's very successful. I'm not ready to bring him out just yet. Hang on, Seth. Just hang on. You know, it occurred to me the other day that what is acne? You know, and then whatever, I can... What is it really? What's God trying to say with acne? I mean, what is that all about? If he takes a life, we understand. But what acne? That's just irritating. You know, and I could do like a 20-minute freeform jazz comedic riff that Seth Rogen has to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think that's pretty cool.
I'll definitely take all that stuff out about us knowing that he's not here.
Yeah.
No.
Set it up.
You definitely will.
No, I definitely will. I promise.
Well, you know what? I trust you. You're a trustworthy guy.
Thank you.
Gosh, I hope this interview is going to be real good.
You know what? I have a feeling Seth Rogen always delivers. He's been waiting patiently. I am recording this from home. He is sitting on the edge of my bed.
just staring at
me. He is smoking the largest, well, I call it a jazz cigarette. You might know it as a marijuana cigarette.
Oh my God, what just happened to you?
He just left. Did you notice Seth Rogen?
He's starting
just
to leave. Left. Seth, come on. Come on, Seth. Okay, I'm sorry. Come on back. He's coming over now. He's coming over.
Cool. Seth, cool. His culture.
Seth, please. I'm ready now.
I'm excited to talk to him and hear about the things he has to say.
Well, you should be.
So many
my guest
cool
today
stories,
is
I bet.
Sona.
Sorry.
Please. You're overdoing it. You're overplaying your hand. Please.
I'm sorry. Okay, please. I'm done. Yeah.
Are you really? Didn't think so. Yeah. You're never done when you say you are. My guest today is a.
Well, we kept it tight.
Nicely done. You always slip the knife in at the last second. My guest today is a hilarious actor, comedian, and writer who has starred in such movies as Superbad, Knocked Up, Pineapple Express, and Neighbors. He now has a new book. It's called Yearbook, and it's available tomorrow. It is a very entertaining look at this gentleman's life. It's packed with good stuff. I'm thrilled. He's with us, and he's coming into the room right now. Have a seat. Thank you. Seth Rogen, welcome. I think of you often, Seth, because you did a very nice thing, which is you came and appeared when I was doing a big tour across the U.S. You kindly agreed to come on and make a live appearance because we were in your hometown of Vancouver, and you took this black and white photograph backstage.
Yeah.
That's my favorite showbiz photo that anyone's ever taken of me. It's me on stage and you can see the whole crowd and I'm wearing a leather bodysuit that was meant to be what Eddie Murphy wore in Raw. And so if you don't know the context, it looks like I've just lost my mind. Like I'm not,
but it looks like it's going well because it's a sold out house. It's a beautiful venue. Oh,
it's a beautiful venue in Vancouver. It's this beautiful black and white photo. And I'm there holding a mic, with this, this bodysuit zipped down to like my groin. And I'm standing on stage like some kind of panther animal just prowling the stage. And you took this photograph and you sent it to me and I framed it. And then I thought, wait a minute. And I would tell people, Seth Rogen took this photo. And they'd be like, yeah, maybe. Like, maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. So I sent it to you and asked you if you would sign it.
Yeah.
And you signed it and sent it back to me. And it's one of my favorite possessions.
That's
I
so
love
lovely
it.
To hear. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you enjoy it. It's it was a pleasure to take.
No, it's just one of those things that, you know, my wife has wondered, why is it in our front hall, in our house? I hung it over a picture of our children.
Just literally over in front of.
Yes. Yeah. On top of. And yeah, it's and I say, look, if anyone wants to investigate the photo underneath,
there's more underneath, but
yeah,
don't need to
they can
about
see
those.
That if they yeah. want.
I have a copy of the same picture and it's up on the wall, I think in my office somewhere, like
somewhere.
In our, yeah.
Oh, great.
No, I mean, it's prominently yeah. featured in our office.
You know what I would do instantly is I would see where it was in your office and I would immediately start calculating, it's a picture of Sandler that's larger.
Who has more prominent photos?
Yes, and much closer and in a larger venue. And, you know, why is David Spade even closer to the action than my photo?
I've had filmmakers shamelessly, in a way that still is shocking, like, we'll be at my house. Like, I've had not that many parties, but sometimes, like, I'll have one and a filmmaker will come over and be like, you have my movie on DVD. And I'm like, you're looking? Like, that's a thing you do when you go to people's houses?
Oh, it's amazing how sensitive.
Uh-huh.
I both came from worlds very far from show business. But the idea that I would finally get into show business and realize that people are just as thin-skinned and as neurotic as I am, people I idolize.
Oh, yeah.
People who have proven themselves a million times over at the late night show, we had this all the time. We had celebrities come and they would look around and they would see that their picture wasn't up. And they would ask me.
You.
They would come up to me and go like,
"You're the one."
Yeah, and I used to say like, "Oh, I don't really know much about that," but that didn't help because what I more or less said was, "That's up to someone whose job it is to gauge where you are in show business,
exactly."
And how prominent, and of course, that just made it worse.
Based on actual rankings, yeah, this is not my personal thing.
It's not me. This is based on where you stand in show business now. Now, don't get me wrong. 8 years ago, you'd have been near.
You were up there. Yeah,
you were there. You were there, and then you know what happened. And 4 years ago,
there.
We took you down. Yeah. You know, you can't still be up there after what happened. So
no, it's I'd be lying if I haven't stalked the halls of a place or two, eyeing my phone and seeing if I made the cut. But I don't expect it. I don't expect to be there.
That's good. You're a humble man.
And I do. Yeah. And like some famous people like are exactly how you think they're going to be. And some are like regular people, you know, and some are nothing, not at all what you think they're going to be.
This gets me right into I'll start with a compliment. I thoroughly, thororoughly enjoyed your book. They got me
an electronic
copy.
Amazing.
and I'm going to be honest with you. I've been sent electric copies of other people's books ahead of time, and I haven't looked at them. I'm going to be honest with you. I've said, like a kid in eighth grade, I thought Faulkner really nailed it in this short story, and I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about.
Exactly.
I really like the part that took place in the South.
Yes, exactly. he nailed that.
He nailed that Southern part. And, you know, I was curious about your book, and they got it for me, and I was genuinely curious about how does a Seth Rogen come about, because you are a very unique comedic voice, and I mean that in the as only praise. You really are, and
I take everything as praise, regardless of how it's intended.
One of the benefits of a lot of marijuana is just you take everything as praise.
I literally just hear what I want to hear. Yeah,
yeah. No, I remember many. I've encountered you in Los Angeles several times, and I've just lit into you.
Yeah, say, exactly.
You motherfucker,
you fucking asshole.
You know, and you just you smile and you
Thank
say
you so
thanks.
Much.
I like your work too.
So good to see you. Distorted reality. Lovely.
I've sued you several times, and you have responded with the kindest notes.
The nicest word. Thank you. I appreciate all those times.
What I love about your book is that you, right up front, you say, look, I'm telling what happened, and it's going to involve some famous people. There's going to be some awkward encounters when this book comes out. And what you describe is the reason I haven't written a book yet, because, and I've sometimes thought that if I ever wrote a book, I would seriously call it, I Waited for Them to Die.
I did not. These are people I will 100%.
I know. I'm reading the book, and this is what really first of all, you're obviously a very funny writer. I didn't realize you started stand-up that young.
Yeah.
And writing jokes for a moil.
For a moil, yeah.
For a moil, a guy whose job is to remove the foreskin surgically at a sacred Jewish ritual, the bris. You were hired by a moil to write jokes for him, and you did.
When I did.
So,
because I was like 14 or 15 years old.
Yes, and then the moil, you said you have to pay me $500 for these jokes, and you're like 15, 16, something, and he didn't like all the jokes, so he said, maybe I'll pay you $300. You're like, no, I want all the $500. And you stood up to this moil in Vancouver, and you had the meeting in like a Lamborghini sports car. So this is just, I'm giving people a small taste of these fantastic stories that you tell, are really fun. But the moil, I don't care his name. You go on to talk about telling stories about like Nicolas Cage, which are fantastic. But you're going to hear from Nicolas Cage.
Oh yes, I will. I'm used to hearing from famous people, I guess, to some degree. I've done it because I have a hard time, and it's an awkward thing to reconcile being someone who likes to be honest and who likes to tell stories that they find interesting and that they genuinely feel other people will find interesting and that likes to mine from their own life. And there was a point, where I'm like, oh no, like a lot of the things that are happening to me involve these other very famous people because that is the life I lead. And so, but I guess I've experienced in the past where I have told stories about other famous people on talk shows, and I do hear from them, and I have made jokes because also in our films we make a lot of jokes about famous people, and we're highly like referential to pop culture in our films. And I've also been told to my face by some of those famous people that they really don't like it. The truth is,
now, like, can I just quickly ask you, how does that make you feel? In that moment, because I've had this happen many times, and what happens is I immediately go into a shame spiral.
For sure. And I think that it's something that I tried not to be mean to people that I genuinely didn't. Like, I tried to be candid, but not derogatory in a way that I wouldn't be jokingly derogatory, I guess, in like any other kind of like a talk show type setting, I guess you would say, you know? But I'm 100% sure someday I'll have a very awkward interaction with Nicolas Cage, but I've already had a few, so I'll just add it to the list.
You know what I love is you tell this story. You can stop me at any point and say, oh, don't give that away.
No, I don't care. I don't know how to promote a book. Just tell everything.
Well, you tell this really funny story of having this very awkward meeting with Nick Cage, who you had met once before, and he basically only has the meeting so he can accuse you. Basically, you helped rip him off. And it's the only reason he asked for the meeting is to tell you to your face, you rip me off, and then storms out of the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's insane. It's madness. It's madness.
It was more of a pointed question that did we rip him off. But yeah, he was going to be in the Green Hornet, and he had done a character that was like, a bohemian man. And he performed it for us, and it was startling, and thank God our reaction, I think, was so negative to it, because just the idea of Nicolas Cage as a white bohemian man
you're saying bohemian. The reason, and everyone's thinking, what's wrong with him doing a bohemian
the
character?
The truth is, this is the problem. And that's the problem. It actually, when they first pitched it to me, I thought it was bohemian, and in my head, I was like, that's okay. It was Bahamian. It was he pitched it as a white Jamaican man. Was the idea?
Yes. Yes.
To which we were like, I don't think that's a. I we would rather not do that, I think, ultimately. To which we were kind of told, see him do it. Let's see it. And we did, and we did not love it, and it just didn't seem like it would
and,
work.
And in this moment that you described so well, Nick Cage is doing something that you learn very quickly that A-list celebrities, powerful people are used to. Powerful people are used to, when they do something, they get adulation immediately from everyone around them. So you know that Nick Cage has been doing this Caribbean Bahamian accent for people. Everyone's just been crying and saying, this is fantastic. Then he encounters you, and you're the first person who's looking at it, just saying,
I didn't like it. I couldn't pretend I liked it. And
right.
And then at that, so then we were all supposed to have dinner, and he left right away.
Right.
He is, and I get why. It was uncomfortable. It wasn't like, it's one of those situations though. And to his credit, it's one of those situations. You're like, I wish I could just leave this, but I can't. He did. Like, it's like if you're at the beginning of a long meal and you're like, well, I can't just get up and leave. Like, that would be, you can't just do that. I think
you can if you're Nick Cage.
If you're Nick Cage, the answer is like, no, you can just get up and go. And he literally just,
he got on a flaming motorcycle. Yeah. His head turned into a skull and he drove away.
He just got up and left. And I do remember thinking, like, wow, I didn't do, like, my whole life I didn't know that was an option. I could just leave an awkward situation.
Yes, you can.
If I don't want to be in it anymore. So yeah, then years later, yeah, there's a movie that he was going to be in that we were maybe going to produce. And yeah, he called us in to meet with him. And I thought, and the premise was, let's clear up what happened in the past, which I got. Like,
yeah.
It was like, that was awkward. And to me, it was awkward. So if anything, I was like, great, let's like just talk it out. We'll explain what happened. No hard feelings. Yeah. Instead, we get to the meeting and he's like, that guy, the character in Spring Breakers, is that a ripoff of what I did for you that day? We were like,
oh my God.
No.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right. And then we were like, when we start talking about the media, the movie that we were meeting on more, and like after a few minutes, he was like, I gotta go. And then again, he just got up and left. And I'm like, wow. Like, again, what a move.
But I love that. Move. That meeting was just so, under the guise of, let's straighten out what happened and then talk about the next project, he tricked you into coming to a meeting and then got you to brought up something and more or less accuse you of something. You said no, and then he just left again.
Yeah,
again,
left back again. He got back on his flaming motorcycle. His head turned into a skull. He had a chain. The whole thing. And it was well. But it's like, in a good way.
Stunned by a few things. I'm stunned by how thin-skinned some people can be, and I'm also stunned at the degree to which very famous people who you'd think their ego has been ladled with praise, like basted with praise. Like, it's always pictured like the ego is like a turkey.
In a nurturing, loving way, yeah.
Yes, like a golden turkey that—
Getting every inch of their ego, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there are really good chefs at Thanksgiving. They'll keep cracking the oven and
they'll keep
ladling more gravy onto the turkey to keep it moist and to just make sure it's absolutely perfect. That's what's been happening to their egos for all this time, and yet— the surprising degree to which many of them are bitter and feel that they've been screwed.
Oh, yeah. Very
angry. And I'm thinking, what do you, if I made a promise to myself when I got into show business a long time ago, whatever happens to me, I refuse to be bitter. Now that, you know, didn't work out.
Put to the test, I would imagine.
I'm very bitter. No, I'm not. I'm not at all.
You tell yourself that.
I'm not bitter at all. I'm not bitter. No, I really am not. I'm really just delighted that I get to do this. Look, I'm heavily medicated. That helps. All kinds of just.
Yeah. No, I try.
Science has really helped me.
Yeah, like you meet, and then you do meet other famous people who do seem genuinely grateful and do navigate their lives with true gratitude and grace and genuinely go out of their way to make understand that how they are viewed and work against that. I don't do that nearly as much as I probably could. I look at other famous people being nice. Like, I try. I really, again, I don't think, and I think most people who come across me probably, hopefully have a positive interaction.
Yes, yes.
One of the defining, I remember a moment where I was on the Sony lot and I ran into Will Smith, who I had maybe met once before, but I was talking to him on the Sony lot. And then around a corner comes a tour group of like 30 or 40 people or something like that. And they see us just standing there talking to each other. And we look at each other and we both look to the tour group. And we then make eye contact again as though we both have reached, in my head, the same conclusion. But what I realized is we actually reached opposite conclusions, because what I did was literally turn around and run away as Will Smith walked up to the tour group to take pictures with every single person in the group. And I was like, that's why Will Smith is the biggest movie star on the planet and has been for a very long time. And I am like a guy who's
you
like,
ran away.
I physically was like, peace. Like, I can't deal with this. This is too much for me. I don't know. There's too many people. It's just too many people. It was just too much for me to navigate. And literally, I booked it as I looked back to see Will Smith like embracing a family and taking a selfie with them.
So, Sona, yeah. I'm not going to say anything, but you should tell Seth, you've known me for very well for 11 years. Which one am I?
You are Will Smith, 100%.
To a sick degree, I go towards anybody who wants any of my time. And it's not cool. It's the opposite
of cool. It's bad.
It's not cool at all.
You push Will Smith out of the way.
I push. Yes. I chase trams the way a dog chases a bus.
He's the tour guide.
I chase trams.
Welcome.
And they're like, why is that lady running after us? If people are at all happy to see me, I talk to them until they start making nervous eye contact with Sona, like, how do we make this?
How do we get away?
Nothing brings a family together like a large two-topping pizza. It's the perfect way to celebrate any occasion. This happens all the time at my house.
Yeah.
I say, kids, let's get together. Your father wants to tell you stories of his childhood. Nobody comes running, all right? But guess what? When I get one of those two large two-topping pizzas at Domino's, suddenly everybody wants to hear from Daddy. At Domino's, you can carry out large two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 for this week only. No limit on number of pizzas. You know, what toppings do you like? I like pepperoni.
I like olive. I like bell pepper. I like mushrooms. I know you don't like mushrooms. I like mushrooms.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to out me as a no mushroom guy, but okay. Domino's Pizza. That's the way to get the whole family together. And this is a great deal. Visit Domino's.com or use the app to order your large two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary. If you're being honest, no one really knows what you do for work, especially if you're in B2B. That's a business doing business with other businesses.
Oh, I didn't know you knew what that was.
I know exactly what that is. B2B, I use that all the time. Businesses doing businesses with other businesses. Fortunately, LinkedIn has a network of professionals who get what you do, and you can reach the right people who matter most to your company. LinkedIn has over 1 billion members on its platform, including 70 million decision makers.
That's good.
Since LinkedIn members are regularly updating their work history, you can precisely build a target audience by job title, industry, company, and more. Start reaching the right people for your, get ready, B2B business with LinkedIn ads. Gets even better because LinkedIn will give you a $100 credit on your next campaign.
That's crazy.
Yeah, just go to linkedin.com/Team Coco to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/Team Coco. Terms and conditions apply. I get to say this again. Listen, LinkedIn, the place to be, right?
That's cool.
Business to business.
That's really cool.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
I'm reminded of another thing in your book, which was just fascinating to me because I find him to be such an interesting guy, is you had this meeting with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas shows up. And I think you were unaware that George Lucas was going to be there or was going to pop by. And, well, you can relate what happens in this story, which is pretty startling.
Yeah. What happened was, so this was 2000, it was the beginning of 2012. And I don't know if people remember, but there was a theory at the time that in December of 2012, the world was going to end, because that's when I believe the Mayan calendar ended, which is, in retrospect, a shaky theory to be making real decisions based on.
They were right about everything else.
So, like Conan said, me and Evan were called into a meeting with Steven Spielberg, which was a real treat and an amazing. I'd met him a couple times, very in passing, but it was a thrill, you know. And we got to the meeting and we were waiting in his office for him. It's like a doctor's office. They take you in first and you wait for them to come in. And he came in with George Lucas, which was mind blowing. Wow. Like you it just they're there together. It truly, you know, for like a nerdy kid, like one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my entire life. And at which point Spielberg, if I remember, like, it's kind of like making phone calls and doing some stuff as he's like, I need a few minutes, as George Lucas sits down and talks to me and Evan, at which point, very quickly, the conversation turns to, like, how's it going? Not great. We're nearing the end of 2012, and the world is going to end, essentially.
To which
me and Evan are like, is he joking? A question that still haunts me to this day, and I think I know the answer, is was he joking? I really don't think. It did not appear he was joking.
Oh, no.
So we tried to prod, and we're making jokes. It's like, oh, like, what's supposed to happen? It's like, oh, a giant fault is going to, an earthquake.
No, he's very seriously saying, yeah, it's a fault line.
It's a fault line. I'm like, oh, good thing the Skywalker Ranch is on the other side of the fault line. And he's like, oh, that's not a coincidence. Like, and we're like, oh, like, what?
He's thought it all out.
He's really thought it all. And so at which point we making a joke like, oh, well, like if you got a spaceship to escape Earth, like, you know, can we get a seat on that thing? And he was like, no.
Oh, no.
Which again, like, it makes me think he wasn't joking, because if you were joking, you would just say yes to go, like, to at least placate us by granting our wish to go on the spaceship. But no, he said no. And thank God. But yeah. And again, to this day, I am confounded and plagued by that story. I don't know if he had a spaceship. If he did, I don't know if he was on it that day, but it must have been a weird morning. Have you met him?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Do you buy that maybe he thought that was real?
I think it was real. You know what? I would say Spielberg's reaction would probably tell you everything you need to know.
Spielberg was a little bit like, he was kind of like, sorry for my slightly weird friends.
Right. So that tells you that he was absolutely serious. The last time I ran into George Lucas, and I ran into him, and he was like, hello, Conan. I was like, oh, hello, George, good to see you. And he's like, good to see you. And I think at the end of the conversation, it was brief, but I just said, I've got to, go. I got a show to do, show to tape. And he said, you don't tape a show. You're retired. And I said, no. And he went, yes, you are. Like, he knows that, so yeah, I'm not on a network, but I'm not retired, but so I'm not whatever, but he was telling me that I was retired. And I was saying, well, I'm not, I have a show and I also did this and that and that. And he was kind of like, no. Almost as if I was, isn't it sad that Conan doesn't know?
Someone should have told him that a long time ago.
I have a similar, I actually had heard a similar story where.
That I'm retired?
No, yeah, exactly. That you're retired. I don't know what I'm doing here. And I want to
Conan, where have you been? I haven't seen you since Vancouver when I took that
photo. Thank you for coming out of retirement to record this episode.
I am the J.D. Salinger of comedy.
I had heard a story that George Lucas was on the set of the Solo movie and went up to the lead actor, whose name is Alden. I don't know.
Aaron
his last
Rick
name.
Or something.
Aaron Reich, yeah, which like Alden Aaron Reich, yeah. And went up to him and went, hey, congratulations on Baby Driver. And he said, I'm not in Baby Driver. To which I was told George Lucas responded, are you sure?
Yes, that's what he told me. He essentially told me,
he doubted.
Don't you realize, Conan, you don't make shows anymore, and you haven't since you left NBC. And I was saying, no, I do make. No, you don't. And so, no, you know what? I'm starting to think he's right.
Maybe he's right. This isn't happening.
The world ended in 2012, and this is all like a weird echo of George Lucas's consciousness that we're living
in. I think, yeah. The world did end, and we're living. He survived, and we're living in his mind.
This is all a construct. If anyone could come up with this, George Lucas. The guy's a world builder. He does good world building.
There's so many ways in which I can I relate to you. And then you have this nerve, I think, or daring that I don't have, which is, I was very interested in comedy like you, and it never would have occurred to me to start doing stand-up at 16 with really very little encouragement from people around me. And the way you set out to be in show business at such a young age and said, I really don't think college has much to offer me, and this is what I need to do. I think I have an inner voice that knows what I should do, but it's very quiet. And it's sleepy, and it's an old man who he doesn't talk. He mutters, and you seem to know. You just knew.
Well, mine was very nurtured. Like, my parents were very supportive, and like, although they were not in show business and have anything to do with it, they seemed to think I was funny, and I think I also had like a very realistic, and I naturally did this, luckily, but you know, they say if, like, if you have a big goal, you just got to set a lot of small goals. You know what I mean? So yeah, like that, it was like I started. I was like, I'll do stand up comedy in Vancouver. Like, not the loftiest ambition one could have on the grand scale of things. And then it was like, I'll get in, you know, they film things like Vancouver is like, you know, it's a city in Canada, but like, it is also where a lot of stuff was filmed. Like, so it wasn't like, you know, some wild, it's not like I'm from like Gary, Indiana, and I'm saying like, I'm going to go make stuff. Right. It's like,
you saw that there was a thing called show business.
Yeah, man. They would film movies at our high school every once in a while, like things like that. You just see trailers around. So like it was, and Stan, yeah. And I'm from an actual city, which I think is also something that I credit, because like you have confidence and you're exposed to the real world, and nothing seems as like far-fetched when you're from like a city. And I'm from like Vancouver, like the city of, I'm not from like the suburbs or the outskirts. Like, I grew up in like an actual city environment, you know? So there's theaters, there's plays, they're filming movies. They filmed The X-Files in Vancouver for you. They filmed tons of movies in Vancouver, you know? So I think it was far-fetched in some ways, but it seemed like in my head, I was like, if I could do stand-up comedy, then maybe I'll get an agent. Then maybe I can start getting parts on these movies or TV shows. Maybe I'll get one day, like in my head, like, and also this just speaks to the time. I was like, maybe I'll have a sitcom one day. Like, that was like my, like, I was like, oh, like Seinfeld, like I'll get like my own sitcom. And then it all kind of changed and evolved from there. But like the start was very simple and obtainable feeling, because in my head, I was just like, if I could make just enough money to never get a real job and do comedy, writing jokes for Moyles, like just headlining whenever I could, that was fine. Like I was like, maybe I'll write on a TV show. Maybe I'll, you know, like it was, but then it also, because I start, like I was a writer for a TV show when I was 18 years old. Like, it all happened very young as well. So like, there wasn't a ton of time. I had stretches of unemployment, but there was always like very encouraging signs that I was on like the right path as well, I think, you know. And the truth is, though, like, to what you're saying, and I'm sure you could speak to this, in America, comedy is the least respected art form there is, period. And in Canada, that is not the case. Like, Canada actually has a lot of respect for its, and I'm not saying it, they, I say this with no judgment. I'm not saying comedians should be more respected. I'm just saying they factually are not that respected in America. And they always want to be made out to be buffoons. As someone who makes comedy and makes more dramatic movies, I just have seen like, oh, every dramatic movie we make, people think was like way harder and way more challenging to make than every comedic movie we make, which is in no way accurate, you know?
Yes.
But in Canada, they actually respect comedy as like, something like a big part of their output, a big export of theirs, like a real unit, like global cultural contribution. They see that so many Canadian comedians have made like a global impact, and they're genuinely proud of it in a way that is very nurturing, I think, much more than in America, I would imagine, you know?
Well, I had a very strong, I mean, this, I felt like I've always felt indebted to Canada, not just because of all the great comedy that I grew up watching and the great comedians that I enjoyed so much, but also because when I started the late night show in 1993, we were met with, you know, absolute derision, and the reaction here in the United States seems to be,
this is too weird.
Yeah, could you go just go eat some cancer, please?
Which I don't
think there's an edible cancer pop. Can you just? But in Canada, it was just like, oh, no judgment, and just love the weirdness, keep it coming. And so I think I always
you were incredibly popular among me and all my friends, and I guess we had no idea that maybe I honestly didn't know that in America that you weren't spoken of as highly instantly
I got some stuff I could tell you, but I would say
a weird Canadian sensibility to it, I think, to us. Like, I think it reminded us more of like Kids in the Hall and the stuff that we liked, because it was fucking crazy and weird and totally out of left field compared to what we had been watching on the other stuff. And the other thing is, like, there's a lot of bad, like, because comedy is so fostered in Canada, there's also a lot of bad Canadian comedy, you know,
which
you never see, but we see a lot of. So then, like, I remember when your show came on and it was like, oh, this is like a big American thing, but it feels like it has this super weird sensibility, which we are generally used to seeing come from our own country, was thrilling, honestly.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, actually, about a story I've heard?
Yeah. You can't. There's no, this is a one-way street, Seth.
Is there a story involving you at Damiano's Pizza Place that was on Fairfax across from Cantor's Deli, where someone fell through a ceiling?
Yes. Yes. Why? I'm like, you're firing a neuron that hasn't been fired.
It's not like a famous. It's a story because I used to live right there and I would go there all the time. This pizza place, it's closed now. It's called Domino's.
You know what it was? It was right across the street from Cantor's Deli.
Yeah, exactly.
And in my Groundlings days, when I was like doing improv in sort of that general Fairfax area, Melrose, I would go to Damiano's Pizza because it was the closest thing to like a Boston pizza.
It was sort of like the most East Coast pizza in LA.
I would go to Damiano's, and why do I remember? I have a vague memory about
the story I was told is that you were sitting at a table, and I don't know who the fuck even told me this story, but the story I was told is you were sitting at a table with someone, and a man fell through the ceiling and landed on your table.
It was like a drop ceiling, and someone was doing work up above and came crashing down, and I think I tried to like say, because it's like dust and asbestos all over my pizza and the guy's work boot. And I think they just gave me another pizza. I think I just got another pizza. It wasn't, you know, today I'd try and say I was triggered, I was upset. You know, I want the Damiano family to pay me $2 million. But I think I got another. This was in the old days, guys, when you just got another pizza.
When a human would fall into your pizza and all you got was a new pizza.
This is what happens when you've been around for a while and according to George Lucas, retired as long as I've been.
Exactly.
You start forgetting all this stuff that happened to you. Like, I had a friend recently remind me, I forgot this, that we were both in like a bar or a restaurant.
Another man fell through the ceiling.
Same guy.
Everywhere.
Same guy. Same guy.
George.
George, again? This time I was eating ramen and they gave me another ramen. But my friend Randy said, remember that time we were in a bar and we heard a loud noise and a guy on a motorcycle had been racing down like Melrose, wiped out on his motorcycle, and he and the motorcycle got wedged underneath a car.
Oh my God.
And the motorcycle burst into flame. Oh my and he God. Was lying kind of near the motorcycle, and the motorcycle was underneath the trunk of the car, which was starting to catch fire. And I just grew up watching movies where the gas tank explodes.
Yeah.
So I don't even think I'm this kind of person. I dashed out of the crowd, put my arms around the guy who was lying there in his leather jacket and dragged him away from the motorcycle because the car was going to explode, which is what happens in every movie.
Yeah.
And I dragged him far away. And then he was like, why the fuck did you move me?
Oh my God.
And I was like, what? And he was like, my leg. And I looked down, and his leg was kind of fucked up.
What?
And I was like, well, I'm sorry. The car's about to explode. And we look over. The car didn't explode.
Sir, they don't explode. You not seen a movie?
I went, every TV show I watched as a kid, the car blows up. And I just saved you from that. And we were both looking at this very small, smoldering fire. And he was not grateful. And... But my friend Randy was like, that was really brave what you did. And I thought, well, actually, no, the guy's mad. And then I forgot about it until Randy just reminded me of it. But I'm thinking, I don't know, I need people to start reminding me of things that I did because I forgot about the guy coming through the roof at Damiano's Pizza completely.
I'm amazed you forgot about it. That's a story I would remember. I would have asked.
Well, I've had, look, I'm
you
a guy.
You've had a lot of interactions.
Everything, so many things have happened to me, Seth. When you get to my stage in life and you have.
Retired, just years
Yes, retired. Occasionally around. Running into an apparently dismissed. George Lucas.
Determined to rewrite reality itself.
Look, if George Lucas says I'm retired and he has created had the largest cultural impact of anyone in film in probably the 20th century, I think he's right. I think I am retired.
Retired, my friend.
I have to ask you, you talk about your obsession, your enjoyment of pornography in a very healthy way, in a very healthy and open way. And then you talk about how you were so into it. And young people need to know this. Porn is at your fingertips right now.
Yeah.
Anywhere you go in the world in high def. But there was a time when you had to be aroused by like the curve of someone's ankle in a fleeting glimpse in a movie where everyone's fully clothed, you know? But you were really, you were a guy who was interested in how can I get more of this? And you were so interested that you went to the 2003 adult video awards, AVN awards, which if anyone doesn't know, that's the Oscars of porn.
Yes.
Which I think the Oscars should be the porn of porn, or the Oscars of porn.
The AVN of movies.
But you went to that, and so I didn't see you there, which surprises me.
Exactly. You won that year.
Well, that's the year I won.
Yeah, you killed it.
I won.
The funny speech you destroyed. That was a really good speech.
Funniest naked
funniest
naked penis.
Cum shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How did you get it to angle off to the side like that? And make that
How'd you make that, silly string come out?
Listen, I had a career before whatever it is I'm doing now, and that's what I did. But it was
George Lucas retired you from that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Remember when I did porn, George? You're retired.
You're retired.
All right. But what I love is that you talk about you're one day perusing some adult material online and you make this incredible discovery.
Yeah. So, and it's a discovery that other people I know have made, shockingly.
Can I just point out quickly before you say it? The discovery was not a one-shot COVID cure.
No, exactly.
It's not at that level. If you're all excited now.
It's like a true, books will be written. Discovery might be a grandiose term for what this
is.
A discovery. In order for the in order for this to be relevant, I cannot speak enough to the obscurity of the porn site I was looking at the time. Like, this, like it would not, this would not come up. This is not like a top 20 site, I would say. Like, it was, it had a lot of, it seemed highly Eastern European. I was looking at a page of thumbnails, and a house that I recently moved into has like a pretty distinct, like, water fountain in the front yard. And I noticed amongst like these dozens and dozens of thumbnails what looked like the water fountain in my new front yard. And I clicked on the link, and it very much was a porno movie that was filmed in the water fountain in my new front yard. And it was.
Doesn't the realtor have to disclose? You know, they're supposed to say.
They tell
okay.
you if it's haunted. I think they have to tell you if it's haunted.
they don't have to tell you if there's been pornography shot there.
Well, I guess. Well, the truth. But also, like, at the end of the day, ultimately, any house you've lived in, people have fucked in it. Unless you built it, there's someone has fucked in that house. Someone's fucked in your house. Someone's fucked in all your houses.
No, I live in a nunnery. I live in a nunnery that closed down on. I actually bought it and evicted the nuns.
You bought it under the premise no one had fucked in it. There's two types. It's not a box you can click on Zillow, I don't think, is I want to know. If it was, I don't click.
So you maintain that if someone's living in a home in Los Angeles, there's a what? 30% chance?
I'd say 40. I'd say 30-40% chance porn has been filmed in your house.
I think, Sona, I love your house, but definitely porn's been shot in your house.
For sure.
And then it was, I met someone I know lives in the neighborhood I moved into, and they're like, oh, you moved into that house, huh? And I was like, what does that mean? Again, my fear again. It was like, is it a murder house? Is that? He's like, no, it's the porn house. And I was like, oh, no. I moved into the porn house? I guess I did.
Do you still live there?
I do live in the porn house. It's great. Okay. Done me well. Very erotic.
You know what's
setting.
Nice?
Lots of candle lighting everywhere. Just,
you know, it'd be great.
All the curtains blowing in the breeze constantly. It's weirdly erotic. Every element of the house. I would describe it as architecturally erotic.
You know, it's funny because sometimes when you buy, like, I come from the East Coast. You know, I come from Boston and the outlying Massachusetts area. And when you buy a house, you're always going and finding out the history of that house.
Yeah.
And the former owners will give you, well, here we have pictures of it from the 1920s. And then someone else will say, well, you know, I found a picture from 1895 of the house you moved into. You know, it was once a granary. And I just love that in LA, that the version of that is you getting all this really nice, these very lovely people saying, oh, we have footage.
Oh, it's a
we have
house.
Footage from 2001 of the foyer. It's all anal, but you're going to, you know.
I know so many people that, like, another one of my friends, and this is much worse, had porn shot, and he found a porn shot in his house, but, like, in, like, an upholstered banquette that was there, like, that, and the same upholstery was in. And
that absorbs. That was an absorbent. Yeah,
that's in there. You gotta steam that out. But, I think, ultimately, yeah. But, like, again, if people have fucked in your house, so, like, do cameras make a big difference? I don't know. Does like, at the end of the day?
Well, it's the, yeah.
Yes.
It's the amount
the
of,
yes.
It's the amount of sex. It's just the amount of it and the varieties of it. Yeah, well, I think it does.
It's a photogenic, it films well. They showed,
you know,
got some good angles.
I have to say, you know, we've been talking about your book, which I read, your book, and it's just packed with really fun stories like this. It's very enjoyable. And it occurred to me as I was getting to the end of the book that you're someone, and this is a kind of person I really admire, who figured out how to make their life exactly the way they would have wanted it to be when they were 14. You know what I mean? Like, you were very early on interested in comedy. Okay, you've put yourself right at the center. You can make television. You can perform. You can make and produce movies. You're sort of, you've put yourself right in the sort of hub of this comedy universe. You were very interested in pornography. Well, you live in a home where porn was created. And also, exactly. You're welcome at the Adult Video Awards anytime you want to go. And they'd happily have you, and they would, it would be the drinks would be on the house.
It's a man. And then manifest your dreams.
Yeah. And then same thing. Like this is Oprah's manifest your dreams, but taken probably in a direction that Oprah didn't expect. You were very interested in how can I get marijuana, which was not easy to procure. And you were interested in this and you found out this is something that you really enjoyed. It was helpful to you. It was going to be an important part of your life. Now you have this company, Houseplant.
Uh-huh.
You've completely bioengineered your life to be everything you would want it to be.
Yeah.
That's insane. That is, I think, the highest compliment I can pay someone.
Nice. I'm going to be super honest. A large part of it is because I don't have children. If I did, none of this would be possible. It's like, I have the time to do all these things because I don't have kids. And if I had kids, I could not do half this shit.
I've never hated my two children more than I do now. Because my son and my daughter have stood between me and a marijuana empire.
Exactly.
Regular outings at the adult video conference.
But people are always like, how do you do so much? And that is always like, as I've gotten older, I think it's because you can just do less than I can because you have this whole thing you're doing that I'm not doing, you know,
creating other children.
Exactly.
It seemed genetically incapable of showing gratitude.
Exactly.
Okay. Listen, I went to a dark place.
Good. That's how I always hope this will go.
Seth, you've been incredibly nice to me over the years.
And
I will point out, before I went into my retirement, you did shoot a Clueless Gamer with me. I think it was you and Zac Efron which you drew penises on my forehead.
That's right. I did not feel good about that, I'll be honest.
I didn't feel great about it when I found out that it was a Sharpie. They were Sharpies and they didn't come. It didn't. I think I drove home from us shooting that bit with a cock and balls drawn, one by you and one by Zac Efron, very clearly on my forehead and cheek. And I do have children and we couldn't get it right off. And I was driving home on like the 10 freeway, just thinking about the choices I had made in my life.
I've been there, man. I've been there.
So I have to thank you for that.
I remember being on the set of a movie having a dog eat a beef jerky out of my ass. So make it seem like it was sniffing my butt. I was like, you made these choices, Seth. This is you made this bed. It is time for you to lie in it.
Nothing Chaplin wouldn't have done. Think
exactly.
About it.
Exactly.
Well, I want to make sure I get this book, your book. It's really, it's available tomorrow. And you should check it out because it really is delightful. And it's got so much. It's just packed with really funny, honest stories. And I don't know. Congratulations. You've done it again. Everything seems to work out for you, and it's enraged me.
Thank you so much. Good. I do remember you came to our office once and were visibly angry at how big it was.
Oh, yes.
We don't have that office anymore, but I remember.
I remembered I shot some bit that you kindly helped me out with, and I had to come through your window, I think, your office window, and it meant that I was in your office for half an hour while they set up cameras to shoot this quick thing. I think it was for MTV. I don't know what it was for, like the Video Awards or something. And I had to come in through the window, and all I could was this beautiful, gorgeous office that like Louis B. Mayer would have had in the 40s.
It literally was Louis B. Mayer's office.
Was it really?
Yes.
I was like, look, I love Seth, and I know that Seth has had a lot of success. I was shaken. I was shaken to the core. Because I think I went back to like my office that gets no light in the corner. I'm like, I've been doing this. I remembered saying, I've been doing this 30 years. And Seth Rogen, that pothead, you had like a, you know, everything was absolutely gorgeous. You had clearly had a decorator. I think someone in a white jacket brought you a joint halfway through exactly. on a silver tray and you, well, and it was, what's funny, it was lit for you.
The only reason we had that office is because we had been kicked out. It's one of the only standalone buildings on the Sony lot. And we smoked so much weed that we kept getting kicked out of the other offices, but they needed us on the lot because yes. we were working there. And so they were like, I guess we have to give you this building because it's the only building that we could be in that we wouldn't get kicked out of because we didn't share any walls or ventilation with anybody.
Well, that is the last piece of advice that people should get out there.
Exactly.
If you want the good office.
Smoke too much weed to be in any other office. Yeah.
I leave you. You know what I said earlier in the podcast? I never wanted to be bitter.
Yeah.
You have brought we'll up you the memory of your office and all the offices I've had. I am extremely bitter right now.
Good.
And that's your fault, Seth.
Perfect.
Hey, Seth, really, thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
And I can't wait till we see each other in person.
I know. It'd be
at
lovely.
Your 700,000 square foot office.
Exactly. It'll be amazing. I'll find you.
Casting me in the part of the Irish leprechaun.
Perfect. So. Thank you so much. This was lovely. I genuinely appreciate it.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
If you're a regular listener of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend and you're always jonesing for more, we have started doing something that I'm having a lot of fun with. On Thursdays, we drop Conan O'Brien Needs a Fan. And this was an idea just because I have lovely fans and they're really funny. And when I encounter them on the street, in life, anywhere around the world, they always make me laugh. And I thought, wait a minute, why just talk to celebrities? Let's have a way that I can have inane, insane, left brain conversations with my fans, people that listen to the show, or even people that just barely tolerate me, aren't necessarily fans, but want to crack at talking to Conan. That's right. I'm talking about myself in the third person. That's a sign that I'm getting to like Caligula levels of insanity. So anyway, we started doing that. And you don't have to do anything if you subscribe to this show, if it's in your, what's the way to say it, Matt? If it's in your
podcast feed,
if it's on your Lazy Susan,
your podcast carousel,
if it's on your podcast carousel, if it's in your, if you have Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, these will automatically show up on Thursday. You do nothing. I just show up there like a bad penny over and over and over again.
If you have one of those Home Depot pneumatic tubes, it will just come out Thursday morning out of one of those.
Is that pretty good?
That was good. Yeah.
I auditioned to be do the voiceover guy on those Police Academy movies, but they trimmed me down for Michael Winslow. So here I am now. Here's a door opening.
Open.
Here's a door closing.
What? Oh. What?
I want to be a sound effects guy who kind of says what he's doing as he's doing it. Well, I'll just unlatch this door. Unlatch. I'm just going to pick up this vase. Pick up. Well, better time to perform this surgery. Incision. Wouldn't it be great if I want to do a scripted podcast where I say that I can do all the sound effects and it's a scripted, you know, drama, you know, it's a drama and I'm not even in it as a character. I just do all the sound effects, but I don't use any sound effects devices. It's like, all right, listen, you, I've had enough. I've got a gun. See,
draw?
Let's try this. Sona and I will be the surgeons, and we'll set up tools, and you do the sounds.
All right, so Matt, you set the scene, and I'll provide all the sound effects in a way that only I can.
Okay. Dr. Movsesian, will you please turn on the EKG machine?
You say yes, Sona. You have to set... What are you doing? No, it's a radio show. It's a podcast. You don't just do it. Let's try that again. Good God. You can't see this, ladies and gentlemen, but she just silently hit a switch. It's a podcast.
She's cueing you to make your sound.
No, she hit a switch silently.
I thought you were going
to... No, I need you to...
Sound of me
I used to say like, yes, turning it on now, God, that kind
I'm
of
crying.
Thing. Okay. Try it again, Matt. Oh, my God.
All right. Dr. Movsesian, please turn on the respirator machine.
No, God, Sona! I do that. You don't do anything other than say, you have to, like a
you
radio show,
Sona,
you play the
yeah.
character and go, yes, doctor, I'm doing it now. And then I take care of the rest. Oh my God.
All right.
You're crying.
I'm crying.
You started
so
crying.
Already.
You just said, you did
oh
it.
Oh my God.
You made the motion, which you don't have to do because it's radio. And then you said, turn on, which is what I'm supposed to do.
I love that the sound effects guy is also the asshole.
The sound effect guy is just an asshole yelling at the actors.
So
this
mad.
Is me. This is why this show, we'll never get more than 6 minutes into the action of this drama, this podcast drama, because the sound effects guy, am just yelling at people.
God.
We'll
so
try
good.
It one last time and then we can give up if it doesn't work. Maybe you should start with a different thing since we've already explored the device.
Okay. Dr. Movsesian, will you please bring out the surgical sponge?
Yes, doctor.
Reveal.
Sorry, Dr. Movsesian, did you hear the sponge say reveal?
I thought you said ring
out. Oh, ring out. I thought you said bring out. Oh, this is the worst. I thought you said bring out, and I went reveal.
Let's try again.
These are, you know what I'm loving is these sad attempts are better than anything we're going to come up with.
This is the worst thing we've ever done.
And okay, let's try
it. Oh my God.
Here we go.
Okay. Dr. Movsesian, please turn on the iron lung.
Yes, doctor.
Switch on.
Dr. Movsesian, I'm afraid the patient is flatlining.
Oh no, Dr. Gourley.
Flatline.
Dr. Movsesian, hand me the defibrillators.
Here you go, Dr. Gourley.
I was going to say hand paddle.
We were doing so
well. Okay, we can edit this part. Try it again.
Dr. Movsesian, please hand me the defibrillators.
Yes, Dr. Gourley.
Hand over.
Charging.
Electricity building.
Clear.
Electricity discharge.
The patient is making noises.
Patient. These are noises from my mouth.
And here's me handing over my resignation. I'm getting out of here.
Not qualified.
We're terrible people. There's a lot of turmoil in the world, and we're just wasting people's time. Everybody's time.
On the back end, the front end,
the
behind
back end, the
scenes.
Front end, from other side. Yes, yes.
Oh,
well, I think I've got
God.
Something there, you know? And I think we're going to have to see if we can't patent that, make sure that no one else steals it from us.
I'm shocked you didn't get that role in Police Academy.
Pretty good.
Shocked.
Drink, 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 drink.
Sona's having a little water right now. Drink, 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 drink.
Swallow. Exhale.
Pretty good, huh?
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sona Movsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Beckton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.